Aria. A leather strip encircled her brow, restraining her voluminous black hair, which tumbled behind her shoulders in a lustrous cascade. Her slender sword was at her hip, her bow on her back. Plain black leather clothed her shapely frame. Poor raiment for one so fair. She was taller than most men, and her stance was perfectly balanced and relaxed. An unmarked face reflected none of the horrific abuse she had endured. Arya's blazing emerald eyes were fixed on the twins, who had turned pale with fright. She approached on silent footsteps and said in soft, menacing tones,
"Shame. Shame to ask of him what only a master can do. Shame that you should use such methods. Shame that you told Arjahad you didn't know Aragorn's abilities. He is competent. Now leave."
Arya frowned dangerously, her slanted eyebrows meeting like lightning bolts in a sharp V, and pointed at the ring in Aragorn's hand.
"Harjet!"
she exclaimed thunderously. The silver shimmered, and a ghostly image of the ring materialized next to it. The two were identical, except that the apparition seemed purer and glowed white-hot. At the sight of it, the twins spun on their heels and fled, robes flapping wildly. The insubstantial ring vanished from Aragorn's hand, leaving the circlet of silver behind. Auric and Frederick were on their feet, eyeing Arya warily. Saphira crouched, ready for action. The elf surveyed them all. Her angled eyes paused on Aragorn. Then she turned and strode toward the heart of the training field. The warriors ceased their sparring and looked at her with wonder. Within a few moments, the entire field fell silent in awe of her presence. Aragorn was inexorably dragged forward by his own fascination. Saphira spoke, but he was oblivious to her comments. A large circle formed around Arya. Looking only at Aragorn, she proclaimed,
"I claim the right of trial by arms. Draw your sword. She means to duel me."
"But not, I think, to harm you,"
replied Saphira slowly. She nudged him with her nose.
"Go and acquit yourself well. I will watch."
Aragorn reluctantly stepped forward. He did not want to do this when he was exhausted from magic use and when there were so many people watching. Besides, Arya could be in no shape for sparring. It had only been 2 days since she had received Tuniver's nectar. "I will soften my blows so I don't hurt her," he decided. They faced each other across the circle of warriors. Arya drew her sword with her left hand. The weapon was thinner than Aragorn's, but just as long and sharp. He slid Zarok out of its polished sheath and held the red blade point down by his side. For a long moment they stood motionless, elf and human watching each other. It flashed through Aragorn's mind that this was how many of his fights with Brom had started. He moved forward cautiously. With a blur of motion, Arya jumped at him, slashing at his ribs. Aragorn reflexively parried the attack, and their swords met in a shower of sparks. Zarok was battered aside as if it were no more than a fly. The elf did not take advantage of the opening, however, but spun to her right, hair whipping through the air, and struck at his other side. He barely stopped the blow and backpedaled frantically, stunned by her ferocity and speed. Belatedly, Aragorn remembered Brom's warning that even the weakest elf could easily overpower a human. He had about as much chance of defeating Arya as he did Durza. She attacked again, swinging at his head. He ducked under the razor-sharp edge, but then why was she toying with him? For a few long seconds he was too busy warding her off to think about it. Then he realized,
"She wants to know how proficient I am."
Understanding that, he began the most complicated series of attacks he knew. He flowed from one pose to another, recklessly combining and modifying them in every possible way. But no matter how inventive he was, Arya's sword always stopped his. She matched his actions with effortless grace. Engaged in a fiery dance, their bodies were linked and separated by the flashing blades. At times they nearly touched, taut skin only a hair's breadth away, but then momentum would whirl them apart and they would withdraw for a second, only to join again. Their sinuous forms wove together like twisting ropes of windblown smoke. Aragorn could never remember how long they fought. It was timeless, filled with nothing but action and reaction. Zarok grew leaden in his hand. His arm burned ferociously with each stroke. At last, as he lunged forward, Arya nimbly sidestepped, sweeping the point of her sword up to his jawbone with supernatural speed. Aragorn froze, as the icy metal touched his skin. His muscles trembled from the exertion. Dimly he heard Saphira bugle and the warriors cheering raucously around them. Arya lowered her sword and sheathed it.
"You have passed," she said quietly, amid the noise.
Dazed, he slowly straightened. Frederick was beside him now, thumping his back enthusiastically.
"That was incredible swordsmanship. I even learned some new moves from watching the two of you. And the elf, stunning!"
"But I lost,"
he protested silently. Auric praised his performance with a broad smile, but all Aragorn noticed was Arya standing alone and silent. She motioned silently with a finger, no more than a twitch, toward a knoll about a mile from the practice field, then turned and walked away. The crowd melted before her. A hush fell over the men and dwarves as she passed. Aragorn turned to Auric.
"I have to go. I'll return to the Dragonhold soon."
With a swift jab, Aragorn sheathed Zarok and pulled himself onto Saphira. She took off over the training field, which turned into a sea of faces as everyone looked at her. As they soared toward the knoll, Aragorn saw Arya running below them with clean, easy strides. Saphira commented,
"You find her form pleasing, do you not?"
"Yes,"
he admitted, blushing.
"Her face does have more character than that of most humans,"
she sniffed.
"But it's long, like a horse's, and overall she's rather shapeless."
Aragorn looked at Saphira with amazement.
"You're jealous, aren't you?"
"Impossible. I never get jealous," she said, offended.
"You are now. Admit it," he laughed.
She snapped her jaws together loudly.
"I am not."
He smiled and shook his head, but let her denial stand. She landed heavily on the knoll, jostling him roughly. He jumped down without remarking on it. Arya was close behind them. Her fleet stride carried her faster than any runner Aragorn had seen. When she reached the top of the knoll, her breathing was smooth and regular. Suddenly tongue-tied, Aragorn dropped his gaze. She strode past him and said to Saphira,
"Skulblaka, eke salubra ono, un malabra ono un ono shurtegal niena, atra nu so weise frike."
Aragorn did not recognize most of the words, but Saphira obviously understood the message. She shuffled her wings and surveyed Arya curiously. Then she nodded her head, humming deeply. Arya smiled.
"I'm glad that you recovered. We didn't know if you would live or not," said Aragorn.
"That is why I came here today,"
said Arya, facing him.
Her rich voice was accented and exotic. She spoke clearly, with a hint of trill, as if she were about to sing.
"I owe you a debt that must be repaid. You saved my life. That can never be forgotten."
It was nothing,"
said Aragorn, fumbling with the words and knowing they were not true, even as he spoke them. Embarrassed, he changed the subject.
"How did you come to be in Gilead?"
Pain shadowed Arya's face. She looked away into the distance.
"Let us walk."
They descended from the knoll and meandered toward Farthen Dur. Aragorn respected Arya's silence as they walked. Saphira padded quietly beside them. Finally, Arya lifted her head and said, with the grace of her kind,
"Arjahad told me you were present when Saphira's egg appeared."
"Yes." For the first time, Aragorn thought about the energy it must have taken to transport the egg over the dozens of leagues that separated Duweldenvaardum from the Spine. To even attempt such a feat was courting disaster, if not death. Her next words were heavy.
"Then know this. At the moment you first beheld it, I was captured by Durza."
Her voice filled with bitterness and grief.
"It was he who led the Urgals that ambushed and slew my companions, Faolin and Glenwing. Somehow he knew where to wait for us. We had no warning. I was drugged and transported to Gilead. There Durza was charged by Galbatorix to learn where I had sent the egg, and all I knew of Ellesmira."
She stared ahead icily, jaw clenched.
"He tried for months without success. His methods were harsh. When torture failed, he ordered his soldiers to use me as they would. Fortunately, I still had the strength to nudge their minds and make them incapable. At last, Galbatorix ordered that I was to be brought to Urbain. Dread filled me when I learned this, as I was weary in both mind and body, and had no strength to resist. If it were not for you, I would have stood before Galbatorix in a week's time.
Aragorn shuddered inwardly. It was amazing what she had survived. The memory of her injuries was still vivid in his mind. Softly, he asked,
"Why do you tell me all this?" "So that you know what I was saved from. Do not presume I can ignore your deed."
Humbled, he bowed his head. "What will you do now? Return to Ellesmere?"
"No, not yet. There is much that must be done here. I cannot abandon the Varden. Arjahad needs my help. I've seen you tested in both arms and magic today. Brom taught you well. You are ready to proceed in your training."
"You mean for me to go to Ellesmere?"
"Yes."
Aragorn felt a flash of irritation. Did he and Saphira have no say in the matter? When?
"That is yet to be decided, but not for some weeks."
"At least they gave us that much time," thought Aragorn.
Saphira mentioned something to him, and he in turn asked Arya,
"What did the twins want me to do?"
Arya's sculpted lip curled with disgust.
"Something not even they can accomplish. It is possible to speak the name of an object in the ancient language and summon its true form. It takes years of work and great discipline, but the reward is complete control over the object. That is why one's true name is always kept hidden, for if it were known by any with evil in their hearts, they could dominate you utterly."
"It's strange," said Aragorn after a moment.
"But before I was captured at Gilead, I had visions of you in my dreams. It was like scrying, and I was able to scry you later, but it was always during my sleep."
Arya pursed her lips pensively.
"There were times I felt as if another presence was watching me, but I was often confused and feverish. I've never heard of anyone, either in lore or legend, being able to scry in their sleep."
"I don't understand it myself," said Aragorn, looking at his hands. He twirled Brom's ring round his finger.
"What does the tattoo on your shoulder mean? I didn't mean to see it, but when I was healing your wounds, it couldn't be helped. It's just like the symbol on this ring."
"You have a ring with the Yahweh on it?" she asked sharply.
"Yes, it was Brom's. See?"
He held out the ring. Arya examined the sapphire, then said,
"This is a token given only to the most valued elf friends. So valued, in fact, it has not been used in centuries, or so I thought. I never knew that Queen Islanzadi thought so highly of Brom."
"I shouldn't wear it, then," said Aragorn, afraid that he had been presumptuous.
"No, keep it. It will give you protection if you meet my people by chance, and it may help you gain favor with the Queen. Tell no one of my tattoo. It should not be revealed."
"Very well." He enjoyed talking with Arya and wished their conversation could have lasted longer. When they parted, he wandered through Farthen Dor conversing with Saphira. Despite his prodding, she refused to tell him what Arya had said to her. Eventually, his thoughts turned to Murtagh, and then to Nasuada's advice.
"I'll get something to eat, then go see him," he decided. "Will you wait for me so I can return to the Dragonhold with you?"
"I will wait. Go,"
said Saphira. With a grateful smile, Aragorn dashed to Trondheim, ate in an obscure corner of a kitchen, then followed Nasuada's instructions until he reached a small grey door, guarded by a man and a dwarf. When he requested entrance, the dwarf banged on the door 3 times, then unbolted it.
"Just holler when you want to leave," said the man with a friendly smile.
The cell was warm and well lit, with a washbasin in one corner and a writing desk, equipped with quills and ink in another. The ceiling was extensively carved with lacquered figures. The floor was covered with a plush rug. Murtagh lay on a stout bed reading a scroll. He looked up in surprise and exclaimed cheerily,
"Aragorn! I hoped you would come. I thought...
"You thought I was stuck in some rat hole chewing on hardtack," said Murtagh, rolling upright with a grin. "Actually, I expected the same thing. But Arjahad lets me have all this as long as I don't cause trouble. And they bring me huge meals, as well as anything I want from the library. If I'm not careful, I'll turn into a fat scholar."
Aragorn laughed, and with a wandering smile seated himself next to Murtagh.
But aren't you angry? You're still a prisoner.
Oh, I was at first, said Murtagh with a shrug. But the more I thought about it, the more I came to realize that this is really the best place for me. Even if Arjahad gave me my freedom, I would stay in my room most of the time anyway.
But why?
You know well enough. No one would be at ease around me knowing my true identity, and there would always be people who wouldn't limit themselves to harsh looks or words.
But enough of that. I'm eager to know what's new. Come, tell me.
Aragorn recounted the events of the past 2 days, including his encounter with the twins in the library. When he finished, Murtagh leaned back reflectively. I suspect, he said, that Arya is more important than either of us thought. Consider what you've learned. She is a master of the sword, powerful in magic, and most significantly, was chosen to guard Saphira's egg. She cannot be ordinary, even among the elves. Aragorn agreed. Murtagh stared at the ceiling.
You know, I find this imprisonment oddly peaceful. For once in my life, I don't have to be afraid.
I know I ought to be, yet something about this place puts me at ease. A good night's sleep helps too.
I know what you mean, said Aragorn wryly. He moved to a softer place on the bed.
Nazuada said that she visited you. Did she say anything interesting?
Murtagh's gaze shifted into the distance and he shook his head.
No, she only wanted to meet me. Doesn't she look like a princess? And the way she carries herself. When she first entered through that doorway, I thought she was one of the great ladies of Galbatorix's court. I've seen elves and counts who had wives that, compared to her, were more fitted for life as a hog than of nobility.
Aragorn listened to his praise with growing apprehension.
It may be nothing, he reminded himself. You're leaping to conclusions.
Yet the foreboding would not leave him. Trying to shake off the feeling, he asked,
How long are you going to remain imprisoned, Murtagh? You can't hide forever.
Murtagh shrugged carelessly, but there was weight behind his words.
For now, I'm content to stay and rest. There's no reason for me to seek shelter elsewhere, nor submit myself to the twins' examination. No doubt I'll tire of this eventually, but for now, I am content.
The shadows lengthen. Saphira woke Aragorn with a sharp rap of her snout, bruising him with her hard jaw.
Ouch!
He exclaimed, sitting upright. The cave was dark, except for a faint glow emanating from the shuttered lantern. Outside in the Dragonhold, Isidar Mithrim glittered with 1,000 different colors, illuminated by its girdle of lanterns. An agitated dwarf stood in the entrance to the cave, wringing his hands.
You must come, Arjitlam. Great trouble! Arjahad summons you. There is no time.
What's wrong?
Asked Aragorn. The dwarf only shook his head, beard wagging.
Go, you must. Kark na Braga, now.
Aragorn belted on Zarok, grabbed his bow and arrows, then strapped the saddle onto Saphira.
So much for a good night's sleep,
she groused, crouching low to the floor so he could clamber onto her back. He yawned loudly as Saphira launched herself from the cave. Oryk was waiting for them with a grim expression when they landed at Trondheim's gates.
Come, the others are waiting.
He led them through Trondheim to Arjahad's study. On the way, Aragorn plied him with questions, but Oryk would only say,
I don't know enough myself. Wait until you hear Arjahad.
The large study door was opened by a pair of burly guards. Arjahad stood behind his desk, bleakly inspecting a map. Arya and a man with wiry arms were there as well. Arjahad looked up.
Good, you're here, Aragorn. Meet Jormungandr, my second in command.
They acknowledged each other, then turned their attention to Arjahad.
I roused the five of you because we are all in grave danger. About half an hour ago, a dwarf ran out of an abandoned tunnel under Trondheim. He was bleeding and nearly incoherent, but he had enough sense left to tell the dwarves what was pursuing him. An army of Urgals, maybe a day's march from here.
Shocked silence filled the study. Then Jormungandr swore explosively and began asking questions at the same time Oryk did. Arya remained silent.
Arjahad raised his hands. Quiet, there is more. The Urgals aren't approaching overland, but under it. They're in the tunnels.
We're going to be attacked from below. Aragorn raised his voice in the din that followed.
Why didn't the dwarves know about this sooner? How did the Urgals find the tunnels?
We're lucky to know about it this early, bellowed Auric.
Everyone stopped talking to hear him.
There are hundreds of tunnels throughout the Beor Mountains, uninhabited since the day they were mined. The only dwarves who go in them are eccentrics who don't want contact with anyone. We could have just as easily received no warning at all.
Arjahad pointed at the map, and Aragorn moved closer. The map depicted the southern half of Alagazia, but unlike Aragorn's, it showed the entire Beor mountain range in detail. Arjahad's finger was on the section of the Beor mountains that touched Cirdar's eastern border.
This, he said, is where the dwarf claimed to have come from.
Orthiad!
Exclaimed Auric. At Jormungandr's puzzled inquiry, he explained,
It's an ancient dwelling of ours that was deserted when Trondheim was completed. During its time, it was the greatest of our cities, but no one's lived there for centuries.
And it's old enough for some of the tunnels to have collapsed, said Arjahad. That's how we surmise it was discovered from the surface. I suspect that Orthiad is now being called Ithrojada. That's where the Urgal column that was chasing Aragorn and Saphira was supposed to go, and I'm sure it's where the Urgals have been migrating all year. From Ithrojada they can travel anywhere they want in the Beor Mountains. They have the power to destroy both the Varden and the dwarves.
Jormungandr bent over the map, eyeing it carefully.
Do you know how many Urgals there are?
Are Galbatorix's troops with them? We can't plan a defense without knowing how large their army is.
Arjahad replied unhappily.
We're unsure about both those things, yet our survival rests on that last question. If Galbatorix has augmented the Urgal's ranks with his own men, we don't stand a chance. But if he hasn't, because he still doesn't want his alliance with the Urgals revealed or for some other reason, it's possible we can win. Neither Orin nor the elves can help us at this late hour, even so. I sent runners to both of them with news of our plight. At the very least, they won't be caught by surprise if we fall.
He drew a hand across his coal-black brow.
I've already talked with Hrothgar, and we've decided on a course of action. Our only hope is to contain the Urgals in three of the larger tunnels and channel them into Farthendur so they don't swarm inside Trondheim like locusts. I need you, Aragorn and Arya, to help the dwarves collapse extraneous tunnels. The job is too big for normal means. Two groups of dwarves are already working on it. One outside Trondheim, the other beneath it. Aragorn, you're to work with the group outside. Arya, you'll be with the one underground. Auric will guide you to them.
Why not collapse all the tunnels instead of leaving the large ones untouched? Asked Aragorn.
Because, said Auric, that would force the Urgals to clear away the rubble, and they might decide to go in a direction we don't want them to. Plus, if we cut ourselves off, they could attack other dwarf cities, which we wouldn't be able to assist in time.
There's also another reason, said Arjahad. Hrothgar warned me that Trondheim sits on such a dense network of tunnels that if too many are weakened, sections of the city will sink into the ground under their own weight. We can't risk that.
Jormungandr listened intently, then asked,
So there won't be any fighting inside Trondheim. You said the Urgals would be channeled outside the city into Farthendur.
Arjahad responded quickly,
That's right. We can't defend Trondheim's entire perimeter. It's too big for our forces, so we're going to seal all the passageways and gates leading into it. That will force the Urgals out onto the flats surrounding Trondheim, where there's plenty of maneuvering room for our armies. Since the Urgals have access to the tunnels, we cannot risk an extended battle. As long as they are here, we will be in constant danger of them quarrying up through Trondheim's floor. If that happens, we'll be trapped, attacked from both the outside and the inside. We have to prevent the Urgals from taking Trondheim. If they secure it, it's doubtful we will have the strength to rouse them.
And what of our families? Asked Jormungandr.
I won't see my wife and son murdered by Urgals.
The lines deepened on Arjahad's face.
All the women and children are being evacuated into the surrounding valleys. If we are defeated, they have guides who will take them to Cirdar. That is all I can do under the circumstances.
Jormungandr struggled to hide his relief.
Sir, is Nasuada going as well?
She is not pleased, but yes.
All eyes were on Ajahad as he squared his shoulders and announced,
The Urgals will arrive in a matter of hours. We know their numbers are great, but we must hold Farthendur. Failure will mean the dwarves' downfall, death to the Varden, and eventual defeat for Surda and the elves. This is one battle we cannot lose. Now go and complete your tasks. Jormungandr, ready the men to fight.
They left the study and scattered. Jormungandr to the barracks, Auric and Arya to the stairs leading underground, and Aragorn and Saphira down one of Trondheim's four main halls. Despite the early hour, the city mountain swarmed like an anthill. People were running, shouting messages and carrying bundles of belongings. Aragorn had fought and killed before, but the battle that awaited them sent stabs of fear into his chest. He had never had a chance to anticipate a fight. Now that he did, it filled him with dread. He was confident when facing only a few opponents. He knew he could easily defeat three or four Urgals with Zarok and magic, but in a large conflict, anything could happen. They exited Trondheim and looked for the dwarves they were supposed to help. Without the sun or moon, the inside of Farthendur was dark as lampblack, punctuated by glittering lanterns bobbing jerkily in the crater.
Perhaps they're on the far side of Trondheim,
suggested Saphira. Aragorn agreed and swung onto her back. They glided around Trondheim until a clump of lanterns came into sight. Saphira angled toward them, then with no more than a whisper landed beside a group of startled dwarves who were busy digging with pickaxes. Aragorn quickly explained why he was there. A sharp-nosed dwarf told him,
There's a tunnel about 4 yards directly underneath us. Any help you could give us would be appreciated.
If you clear the area over the tunnel, I'll see what I can do. The sharp-nosed dwarf looked doubtful, but ordered the diggers off the site. Breathing slowly, Aragorn prepared to use magic. It might be possible to actually move all the dirt off the tunnel, but he needed to conserve his strength for later. Instead, he would try to collapse the tunnel by applying force to weak sections of its ceiling.
Thrister Deloy,
he whispered, and sent tentacles of power into the soil. Almost immediately they encountered rock. He ignored it and reached farther down until he felt the hollow emptiness of the tunnel. Then he began searching for flaws in the rock. Every time he found one, he pushed on it, elongating and widening it. It was strenuous work, but no more than it would have been to split the stone by hand. He made no visible progress, a fact that was not lost on the impatient dwarves. Aragorn persevered. Before long, he was rewarded by a resounding crack that could be heard clearly on the surface. There was a persistent screech, then the ground slid inward like water draining from a tub, leaving a gaping hole 7 yards across. As the delighted dwarves walled off the tunnel with rubble, the sharp-nosed dwarf led Aragorn to the next tunnel. This one was much more difficult to collapse, but he managed to duplicate the feat. Over the next few hours, he collapsed over a half-dozen tunnels throughout Farthendur, with Saphira's help. Light crept into the small patch of sky above them as he worked. It was not enough to see by, but it bolstered Aragorn's confidence. He turned away from the crumpled ruins of the latest tunnel and surveyed the land with interest. A mass exodus of women and children, along with the Varden's elders, streamed out of Trondheim. Everyone carried loads of provisions, clothes, and belongings. A small group of warriors, predominantly boys and old men, accompanied them. Most of the activity, however, was at the base of Trondheim, where the Varden and dwarves were assembling their army, which was divided into three battalions. Each section bore the Varden standard, a white dragon holding a rose above a sword pointing downward on a purple field. The men were silent, iron-fisted. Their hair flowed loosely from under their helmets. Many warriors had only a sword and a shield, but there were several ranks of spear and pikemen. In the rear of the battalions, archers tested their bowstrings. The dwarves were garbed in heavy battle gear. Burnished steel hauberks hung to their knees, and thick round shields stamped with the crests of their clan rested on their left arms. Short swords were sheathed at their waists, while in their right hands they carried mattocks or war axes. Their legs were covered with extra fine mail. They wore iron caps and brass-studded boots. A small figure detached itself from the far battalion and hurried toward Aragorn and Saphira. It was Auric, clad like the other dwarves.
"Aujahad wants you to join the army," he said. "There are no more tunnels to cave in. Food is waiting for both of you."
Aragorn and Saphira accompanied Auric to a tent where they found bread and water for Aragorn and a pile of dried meat for Saphira. They ate it without complaint. It was better than going hungry. When they finished, Auric told them to wait and disappeared into the battalion's ranks. He returned, leading a line of dwarves burdened with tall piles of plate armor. Auric lifted a section of it and handed it to Aragorn. "What is this?" asked Aragorn, fingering the polished metal. The armor was intricately wrought with engraving and gold filigree. It was an inch thick in places and very heavy. No man could fight under that much weight, and there were far too many pieces for one person.
"A gift from Hrothgar,"
said Auric, looking pleased with himself.
"It has lain so long among our other treasures that it was almost forgotten. It was forged in another age, before the fall of the Riders."
"But what is it for?" asked Aragorn.
"Why, it's dragon armor, of course. You don't think that dragons went into battle unprotected? Complete sets are rare because they took so long to make, and because dragons were always growing. Still, Saphira isn't too big yet, so this should fit her reasonably well."
"Dragon armor?" As Saphira nosed one of the pieces, Aragorn asked, "What do you think?"
"Let's try it on," she said,
a fierce gleam in her eye. After a good deal of struggling, Aragorn and Auric stepped back to admire the results. Saphira's entire neck, except for the spikes along its ridge, was covered with triangular scales of overlapping armor. Her belly and chest were protected by the heaviest plates, while the lightest ones were on her tail. Her legs and back were completely encased. Her wings were left bare. A single molded plate lay on top of her head, leaving her lower jaw free to bite and snap. Saphira arched her neck experimentally, and the armor flexed smoothly with her.
"This will slow me down, but it'll help stop the arrows. How do I look?"
"Very intimidating," replied Aragorn truthfully. That pleased her.
Auric picked up the remaining items from the ground.
"I brought you armor as well, though it took much searching to find your size. We rarely forge arms for men or elves. I don't know who this was made for, but it has never been used and should serve you well."
Over Aragorn's head went a stiff shirt of leather-backed mail that fell to his knees like a skirt. It rested heavily on his shoulders and clinked when he moved. He belted Zarok over it, which helped keep the mail from swinging. On his head went a leather cap, then a mail coif, and finally a gold and silver helm. Braces were strapped to his forearms and greaves to his lower legs. For his hands there were mail-backed gloves. Last, Auric handed him a broad shield emblazoned with an oak tree. Knowing that what he and Saphira had been given was worth several fortunes, Aragorn bowed and said, "Thank you for these gifts. Hrothgar's presents are greatly appreciated."
"Don't give thanks now," said Auric with a chuckle. "Wait until the armor saves your life."
The warriors around them began marching away. The three battalions were repositioning themselves in different parts of Farthendur. Unsure of what they should do, Aragorn looked at Auric, who shrugged and said,
"I suppose we should accompany them."
They trailed behind a battalion as it headed toward the crater wall. Aragorn asked about the Urgals, but Auric only knew that scouts had been posted underground in the tunnels and that nothing had been seen or heard yet. The battalion halted at one of the collapsed tunnels. The dwarves had piled the rubble so that anyone inside the tunnel could easily climb out.
"This must be one of the places they're going to force the Urgals to surface,"
Saphira pointed out. Hundreds of lanterns were fixed atop poles and stuck into the ground. They provided a great pool of light that glowed like an evening sun. Fires blazed along the rim of the tunnel's roof, huge cauldrons of pitch heating over them. Aragorn looked away, fighting back revulsion. It was a terrible way to kill anyone, even an Urgal. Rows of sharpened saplings were being pounded into the ground to provide a thorny barrier between the battalion and the tunnel. Aragorn saw an opportunity to help and joined a group of men digging trenches between the saplings. Saphira assisted as well, scooping out the dirt with her giant claws. While they labored, Auric left to supervise the construction of a barricade to shield the archers. Aragorn drank gratefully from the wineskin whenever it was passed around. After the trenches were finished and filled with pointed stakes, Saphira and Aragorn rested. Auric returned to find them seated together. He wiped his brow.
All the men and dwarfs are on the battlefield. Trondheim has been sealed off. Hrothgar has taken charge of the battalion to our left. Ashihard leads the one ahead of us.
Who commands this one?
Jormungandr.
Auric sat with a grunt and placed his war axe on the ground. Saphira nudged Aragorn.
Look!
His hand tightened on Zarak as he saw Murtagh, helmed, carrying a dwarven shield and his hand-and-a-half sword, approaching with Tornak. Auric cursed and leapt to his feet, but Murtagh said quickly, "It's all right. Ashihard released me."
"Why would he do that?"
demanded Auric. Murtagh smiled wryly. "He said this was an opportunity to prove my good intentions. Apparently he doesn't think I would be able to do much damage even if I did turn on the Varden." Aragorn nodded in welcome, relaxing his grip. Murtagh was an excellent and merciless fighter, exactly whom Aragorn wanted by his side during battle.
"How do we know you're not lying?"
asked Auric.
"Because I say so," announced a firm voice.
Ashihard strode into their midst, armed for battle with a breastplate and an ivory-handled sword. He put a strong hand on Aragorn's shoulder and drew him away where the others could not hear. He cast an eye over Aragorn's armor.
"Good. Auric outfitted you."
"Yes. Has anything been seen in the tunnels?"
"Nothing."
Ashihard leaned on his sword.
"One of the twins is staying in Trondheim. He's going to watch the battle from the Dragonhold and relay information through his brother to me. I know you can speak with your mind. I need you to tell the twins anything, anything unusual that you see while fighting. Also, I'll relay orders to you through them. Do you understand?"
The thought of being linked to the twins filled Aragorn with loathing, but he knew it was necessary.
"I do."
Ashihard paused.
"You're not a foot soldier or horseman, nor any other type of warrior I'm used to commanding. Battle may prove differently, but I think you and Saphira will be safer on the ground. In the air, you'll be a choice target for Urgal archers. Will you fight from Saphira's back?"
Aragorn had never been in combat on horseback, much less on Saphira.
"I'm not sure what we'll do. When I'm on Saphira, I'm up too high to fight all but a cull."
"There will be plenty of cull, I'm afraid," said Ashihard.
He straightened, pulling his sword out of the ground.
"The only advice I can give you is to avoid unnecessary risks. The Varden cannot afford to lose you."
With that, he turned and left. Aragorn returned to Auric and Murtagh and hunkered next to Saphira, leaning his shield against his knees. The four of them waited in silence like the hundreds of warriors around them. Light from Farthendor's opening waned as the sun crept below the crater rim. Aragorn turned to scan the encampment and froze, heart jolting. About 30 feet away sat Arya with her bow in her lap. Though he knew it was unreasonable, he had hoped she might accompany the other women out of Farthendor. Concerned, he hastened to her.
"You will fight?"
"I do what I must,"
Arya said calmly.
"But it's too dangerous."
Her face darkened.
"Do not pamper me, human. Elves train both their men and women to fight. I am not one of your helpless females to run away whenever there is danger. I was given the task of protecting Saphira's egg, which I failed. My Briwal is dishonored, and would be further shamed if I did not guard you and Saphira on this field. You forget that I am stronger with magic than any here, including you. If the Shade comes, who can defeat him but me? And who else has the right?"
Aragorn stared at her helplessly, knowing she was right and hating the fact.
"Then stay safe."
Out of desperation, he added in the ancient language, "Wheel Pumnuria Ilion, for my happiness." Arya turned to gaze away uneasily, the fringe of her hair obscuring her face. She ran a hand along her polished bow, then murmured,
"It is my weird to be here. The debt must be paid."
He abruptly retreated to Saphira. Murtagh looked at him curiously. What did she say? Nothing. Wrapped in their own thoughts, the defenders sank into a brooding silence as the hours crawled by. Farthen Dur's crater again grew black except for the sanguine lantern glow and the fires heating the pitch. Aragorn alternated between myopically examining the links of his mail and spying on Arya. Auric repeatedly ran a whetstone over the blade of his axe, periodically eyeing the edge between strokes. The rasp of metal on stone was irritating. Murtagh just stared into the distance. Occasionally messengers ran through the encampment, causing the warriors to surge to their feet, but it always proved to be a false alarm. The men and dwarves became strained, angry voices were often heard. The worst part about Farthen Dur was the lack of wind. The air was dead, motionless. Even when it grew warm and stifling and filled with smoke, there was no reprieve. As the night dragged on, the battlefield stilled, silent as death. Muscles stiffened from the waiting. Aragorn stared blankly into the darkness with heavy eyelids. He shook himself to alertness and tried to focus through his stupor. Finally, Auric said,
"It's late. We should sleep. If anything happens, the others will wake us."
Murtagh grumbled, but Aragorn was too tired to complain. He curled up against Saphira using his shield as a pillow. As his eyes closed, he saw that Arya was still awake, watching over them. His dreams were confused and disturbing, full of horned beasts and unseen menaces. Over and over, he heard a deep voice ask,
"Are you ready?"
But he never had an answer. Plagued by such visions, his sleep was shallow and uneasy, until something touched his arm. He woke with a start. Battle under Farthen Dur.
"It has begun," Arya said with a sorrowful expression. The troops in the encampment stood alertly with their weapons drawn.
Auric swung his axe to make sure he had enough room. Arya knocked an arrow and held it ready to shoot. "A scout ran out of a tunnel a few minutes ago," said Murtagh to Aragorn. "The Urgals are coming." Together they watched the dark mouth of the tunnel through the ranks of men and sharpened stakes. A minute dragged by, then another, and another. Without taking his eyes from the tunnel, Aragorn hoisted himself into Saphira's saddle, Zarok in his hand, a comfortable weight. Murtagh mounted Tornak beside him. Then a man cried, "I hear them!" The warriors stiffened, grips tightened on weapons, no one moved, no one breathed. Somewhere, a horse nickered. Harsh, Urgal shouts shattered the air as dark shapes boiled upward in the tunnel's opening. At a command, the cauldrons of pitch were tilted on their sides, pouring the scalding liquid into the tunnel's hungry throat. The monsters howled in pain, arms flailing. A torch was thrown onto the bubbling pitch, and an orange pillar of greasy flames roared up in the opening, engulfing the Urgals in an inferno. Sickened, Aragorn looked across Farthen Dur at the other two battalions and saw similar fires by each. He sheathed Zarok and strung his bow. More Urgal soon tamped the pitch down and clambered out of the tunnels over their burned brethren. They clumped together, presenting a solid wall to the men and dwarves. Behind the palisade Auric had helped build, the first row of archers pulled on their bows and fired. Aragorn and Arya added their arrows to the deadly swarm and watched the shafts eat through the Urgal's ranks. The Urgal line wavered, threatening to break, but they covered themselves with their shields and weathered the attack. Again the archers fired, but the Urgals continued to stream onto the surface at a ferocious rate. Aragorn was dismayed by their numbers. They were supposed to kill every single one? It seemed a madman's task. His only encouragement was that he saw none of Galbatorix's troops with the Urgals. Not yet, at least. The opposing army formed a solid mass of bodies that seemed to stretch endlessly. Tattered and sullen standards were raised in the monster's midst. Baleful notes echoed throughout Farthen Dur as war horns sounded. The entire group of Urgals charged with savage war cries. They dashed against the rows of stakes, covering them with slick blood and limp corpses as the ranks at the vanguard were crushed against the posts.
A cloud of black arrows flew over the barrier at the crouched defenders. Aragorn ducked behind his shield and Saphira covered her head. Arrows rattled harmlessly against her armor. Momentarily foiled by the pickets, the Urgal horde milled with confusion. The Varden bunched together, waiting for the next attack. After a pause, the war cries were raised again as the Urgal surged forward. The assault was bitter. Its momentum carried the Urgals through the stakes, where a line of pikemen jabbed frantically at their ranks, trying to repel them. The pikemen held briefly, but the ominous tide of Urgals could not be halted, and they were overwhelmed. The first lines of defense breached. The main bodies of the two forces collided for the first time. A deafening roar burst from the men and dwarves as they rushed into the conflict. Saphira bellowed and leapt toward the fight, diving into a whirlwind of noise and blurred action. With her jaws and talons, Saphira tore through an Urgal. Her teeth were as lethal as any sword, her tail a giant mace. From her back, Aragorn parried a hammer blow from an Urgal chief, protecting her vulnerable wings. Zarok's crimson blade seemed to gleam with delight as blood spurted along its length. From the corner of his eye, Aragorn saw Auric hewing Urgal necks with mighty blows of his axe. Beside the dwarf was Murtagh on Tornak, his face disfigured by a vicious snarl as he swung his sword angrily, cutting through every defense. Then Saphira spun around, and Aragorn saw Arya leap past the lifeless body of an opponent. An Urgal bowled over a wounded dwarf and hacked at Saphira's front right leg. His sword skated off her armor with a burst of sparks. Aragorn smote him on the head, but Zarok stuck in the monster's horns and was yanked from his grasp. With a curse, he dived off Saphira and tackled the Urgal, smashing his face with the shield. He jerked Zarok out of the horns, then dodged as another Urgal charged him.
"Saphira, I need you!"
he shouted, but the battle's tide had separated them. Suddenly, a cull jumped at him, club raised for a blow. Unable to lift his shield in time, Aragorn uttered, "Girda!" The cull's head snapped back with a sharp report as his neck broke. Four more Urgals succumbed to Zarok's thirsty bite. Then Murtagh rode up beside Aragorn, driving the press of Urgals backward.
"Come on!"
he shouted, and reached down from Tornak, pulling Aragorn onto the horse. They rushed towards Saphira, who was embroiled in a mass of enemies. 12 spear-wielding Urgals encircled her, needling her with their lances. They had already managed to prick both of her wings. Her blood spattered the ground. Every time she rushed at one of the Urgals, they bunched together and jabbed at her eyes, forcing her to retreat. She tried to sweep the spears away with her talons, but the Urgals jumped back and evaded her. The sight of Saphira's blood enraged Aragorn. He swung off Tornak with a wild cry and stabbed the nearest Urgal through the chest, withholding nothing in his frenzied attempt to help Saphira. His attack provided the distraction she needed to break free. With a kick, she sent an Urgal flying, then barreled to him. Aragorn grabbed one of her neck spikes and pulled himself back into her saddle. Murtagh raised his hand, then charged into another knot of Urgals. By unspoken consent, Saphira took flight and rose above the struggling armies, seeking a respite from the madness. Aragorn's breath trembled. His muscles were clenched, ready to ward off the next attack. Every fiber of his being thrilled with energy, making him feel more alive than ever before. Saphira circled long enough for them to recover their strength, then descended toward the Urgals, skimming the ground to avoid detection. She approached the monsters from behind where their archers were gathered. Before the Urgals realized what was happening, Aragorn lopped off the heads of 2 archers and Saphira disemboweled 3 others. She took off again as alarm sounded, quickly soaring out of bow range. They repeated the tactic on a different flank of the army. Saphira's stealth and speed, combined with the dim lighting, made it nearly impossible for the Urgals to predict where she would strike next. Aragorn used his bow whenever Saphira was in the air, but he quickly ran out of arrows. Soon the only thing left in his quiver was magic, which he wanted to keep in reserve until it was desperately needed. Saphira's flights over the combatants gave Aragorn a unique understanding of how the battle was progressing. There were 3 separate fights raging in Farthendur, one by each open tunnel. The Urgals were disadvantaged by the dispersal of their forces and their inability to get all of their army out of the tunnels at once. Even so, the Varden and dwarves could not keep the monsters from advancing and were slowly being driven back toward Trondheim. The defenders seemed insignificant against the mass of Urgals whose numbers continued to increase as they poured out of the tunnels. The Urgals had organized themselves around several standards, each representing a clan, but it was unclear who commanded them overall. The clans paid no attention to each other, as if they were receiving orders from elsewhere. Aragorn wished he knew who was in charge so he and Saphira could kill him. Remembering Arjahad's orders, he began relaying information to the twins. They were interested by what he had to say about the Urgal's apparent lack of a leader and questioned him closely. The exchange was smooth, if brief. The twins told him,
"You're ordered to assist Hrothgar. The fight goes badly for him."
"Understood," Aragorn responded. Saphira swiftly flew to the besieged dwarfs, swooping low over Hrothgar. Arrayed in golden armor, the dwarf king stood at the fore of a small knot of his kin, wielding Volund, the hammer of his ancestors. His white beard caught the lantern light as he looked up at Saphira. Admiration glinted in his eyes. Saphira landed beside the dwarves and faced the oncoming Urgals. Even the bravest Kull quailed before her ferocity, allowing the dwarves to surge forward. Aragorn tried to keep Saphira safe. Her left flank was protected by the dwarves, but to her front and right raged a sea of enemies. He showed no mercy on those and took every advantage he could, using magic whenever Zarok could not serve him. A spear bounced off his shield, denting it and leaving him with a bruised shoulder. Shaking off the pain, he cleaved open an Urgal's skull, mixing brains with metal and bone. He was in awe of Hrothgar, who, though he was ancient by both the standards of men and dwarves, was still undiminished on the battlefield. No Urgal, Kull or not, could stand before the Dwarf King and his guards and live. Every time Volund struck, it sounded the gong of death for another enemy. After a spear downed one of his warriors, Hrothgar grabbed the spear himself and with astounding strength hurled it completely through its owner 20 yards away. Such heroism emboldened Aragorn to even greater risks, seeking to hold his own with the mighty king. Aragorn lunged at a giant Kull nearly out of reach and almost fell from Saphira's saddle. Before he could recover, the Kull darted past Saphira's defenses and swung his sword. The brunt of the blow caught Aragorn on the side of his helm, throwing him backward and making his vision flicker and his ears ring thunderously. Stunned, he tried to pull himself upright, but the Kull had already prepared for another blow. As the Kull's arm descended, a slim steel blade suddenly sprouted from his chest. Howling, the monster toppled to the side. In his place stood Angela. The witch wore a long red cape over outlandish flanged armor enameled black and green. She bore a strange two-handed weapon, a long wooden shaft with a sword blade attached to each end. Angela winked at Aragorn mischievously, then dashed away, spinning her staff sword like a dervish. Close behind her was Solumbum in the form of a young, shaggy-haired boy. He held a small black dagger, sharp teeth bared in a feral snarl. Still dazed from his battering, Aragorn managed to straighten himself in the saddle. Saphira jumped into the air and wheeled high above, letting him recuperate. He scanned Farthen Dur's plains and saw to his dismay that all three battles were going badly. Neither Arjahad, Jormunda, nor Hrothgar could stop the Urgals. There were simply too many. Aragorn wondered how many Urgals he could kill at once with magic. He knew his limits fairly well. If he were to kill enough to make a difference, it would probably be suicide. That might be what it took to win. The fighting continued for one endless hour after another. The Varden and dwarves were exhausted, but the Urgals remained fresh with reinforcements. It was a nightmare for Aragorn. Though he and Saphira fought their hardest, there was always another Urgal to take the place of the one just killed. His whole body hurt, especially his head. Every time he used magic, he lost a little more energy. Saphira was in better condition, though her wings were punctured with small wounds. As he parried a blow, the twins contacted him urgently.
"There are loud noises under Trondheim. It sounds like Urgals are trying to dig into the city. We need you and Arya to collapse any tunnels they're excavating."
Aragorn dispatched his opponent with a sword thrust.
"We'll be right there."
He looked for Arya and saw her engaged with a knot of struggling Urgals. Saphira quickly forged a path to the elf, leaving a pile of crumpled bodies in her wake. Aragorn extended his hand and said, "Get on!" Arya jumped onto Saphira's back without hesitation. She wrapped her right arm around Aragorn's waist, wielding her blood-stained sword with the other. As Saphira crouched to take off, an Urgal ran at her, howling, then lifted an axe and smashed her in the chest. Saphira roared with pain and lurched forward, feet leaving the ground. Her wings snapped open, straining to keep them from crashing as she veered wildly to one side, right wingtip scraping the ground. Below them, the Urgal pulled back his arm to throw the axe. But Arya raised her palm, shouting, and an emerald ball of energy shot from her hand, killing the Urgal. With a colossal heave of her shoulders, Saphira righted herself, barely making it over the heads of the warriors. She pulled away from the battlefield with powerful wingstrokes and rasping breath.
"Are you all right?"
asked Aragorn, concerned. He could not see where she had been struck.
"I'll live,"
she said grimly.
"But the front of my armor has been crushed together. It hurts my chest, and I'm having trouble moving."
"Can you get us to the Dragonhold?"
"We'll see."
Aragorn explained Saphira's condition to Arya.
"I'll stay and help Saphira when we land," she offered. "Once she is free of the armor, I will join you."
"Thank you," he said. The flight was laborious for Saphira. She glided whenever she could. When they reached the Dragonhold, she dropped heavily to Isidar Mithrim, where the twins were supposed to be watching the battle. But it was empty. Aragorn jumped to the floor and winced as he saw the damage the Urgal had done. Four of the metal plates on Saphira's chest had been hammered together, restricting her ability to bend and breathe. "Stay well," he said, putting a hand on her side, then ran out the archway. He stopped and swore. He was at the top of Volturin, the endless staircase. Because of his worry for Saphira, he had not considered how he would get to Trondheim's base, where the Urgals were breaking in. There was no time to climb down. He looked at the narrow trough to the right of the stairs, then grabbed one of the leather pads and threw himself down on it. The stone slide was smooth as lacquered wood. With the leather underneath him, he accelerated almost instantly to a frightening speed, the walls blurring and the curve of the slide pressing him high against the wall. Aragorn lay completely flat so he would go faster. The air rushed past his helm, making it vibrate like a weather vane in a gale. The trough was too confined for him, and he was perilously close to flying out, but as long as he kept his arms and legs still, he was safe. It was a swift descent, but it still took him nearly 10 minutes to reach the bottom. The slide leveled out at the end and sent him skidding halfway across the huge carnelian floor. When he finally came to a stop, he was too dizzy to walk. His first attempt to stand made him nauseated, so he curled up, head in his hands, and waited for things to stop spinning. When he felt better, he stood and warily looked around. The great chamber was completely deserted, the silence unsettling. Rosy light filtered down from Isidar Mithrim. He faltered. Where was he supposed to go? And cast out his mind for the twins. Nothing. He froze as loud knocking echoed through Trondheim. An explosion split the air. A long slab of the chamber floor buckled and blew 30 feet up. Needles of rock flew outward as it crashed down. Aragorn stumbled back, stunned, groping for Zarok. The twisted shapes of Urgals clambered out of the hole in the floor. Aragorn hesitated. Should he flee, or should he stay and try to close the tunnel? Even if he managed to seal it before the Urgals attacked him, what if Trondheim was already breached elsewhere? He could not find all the places in time to prevent the city mountain from being captured.
But if I run to one of Trondheim's gates and blast it open, the Varden could retake Trondheim without having to siege it.
Before he could decide, a tall man garbed entirely in black armor emerged from the tunnel and looked directly at him. It was Durza. The shade carried his pale blade marked with the scratch from Ajahad. A black round shield with a crimson ensign rested on his arm. His dark helmet was richly decorated like a general's, and a long snakeskin cloak billowed around him. Madness burned in his maroon eyes, the madness of one who enjoys power and finds himself in the position to use it. Aragorn knew he was neither fast enough nor strong enough to escape the fiend before him. He immediately warned Saphira, though he knew it was impossible for her to rescue him. He dropped into a crouch and quickly reviewed what Brom had told him about fighting another magic user. It was not encouraging. And Azhahad had said that shades could only be destroyed by a thrust through the heart.